This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight:
human rights have not been the core priority for the Trump administration, but they've nevertheless been inclined to take some action in response to particularly flagrant violations of human rights.
That's Andrew Miller, Deputy Director for Policy at the Project on Middle East Democracy, on the U.S. position about human rights in Egypt. Details coming up.
Also, fresh violence in northwestern Cameroon has forced hundreds of teachers and students from their classrooms. And Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says he gave President Donald Trump a view of security conditions during their summit yesterday.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story: fresh violence in northwestern Cameroon has forced hundreds of teachers and students from their classrooms. Separatist rebels are targeting schools for not observing calls to strike. For VOA, Moki Edwin Kinziga reports from the northwestern town of Ashing, where a Catholic school principal has been kidnapped.
Heavy rains fall as we arrive at St. Bede's School in the English-speaking town of Ashing. Dozens of students are carrying boxes out of the school. 17-year-old student Ambe John is leaving.
I'm going due to what happened in school, and for the sake of my principal, I need to go so he can be rescued.
Armed men attacked the school on Monday, abducting the principal and the school chaplain. Government officials told VOA the two men were targeted by Anglophone separatists for violating instructions to remain closed in support of the Ambazonian independence movement. The chaplain was later released, but the principal has not been found. Godlove Fomi left his home in the nearby French-speaking town of Bafoussam to pick up his son when he got news of the attack.
The matron gave all the information that she come and take our children home.
I'm feeling too bad because I think that with everything, children would have been going to school, at least to see that their future is guaranteed.
Schools in Cameroon's two English-speaking regions, the Northwest and the Southwest, were shuttered for nearly a year, starting in November 2016. Teachers and lawyers were on strike, demanding reforms to address what they say is the marginalization of Anglophones in mostly French-speaking country. Some schools reopened last October, but the crisis has intensified. Late in November, President Paul Biya declared a state of war in the Anglophone regions. The government says at least 30 schools have been attacked this year, with at least a dozen teachers either killed or wounded in the northwest and southwest regions. Hundreds more have fled. Johnson Ito, the most senior education official in the northwest region, says they have been pleading with the teachers to return since the government has deployed the military to protect them.
We are having a personnel of secondary education, especially a school head, shot at in the northwest here. The going is tough. The tough must get going. So what we are trying to do, raise up the morals of those in the field.
Adolphe Deben Tchofo, governor of the northwest region of Cameroon, has been visiting the villages to encourage parents to send children to school.
Je suis d'abord venu leur convoyer le message du chef de l'État qu'il sait l'impact.
The governor says he has come on behalf of President Biya to call on the population to seal a pact of collaboration with the military and administrative authorities so that the rebels, which the government has deemed terrorists, can be defeated. He says all village heads and traditional rulers should create self-defense groups to ward off infiltration. Since early 2017, the government has responded forcefully to the unrest in the Anglophone regions. Rights groups say the crackdown, which has included the detention of hundreds of people and, at one point, a three-month internet blackout, inflamed tensions, making dialogue more difficult. The conflict has killed dozens on both sides this year and displaced at least 20,000 people. Moki Edwin Kintzka for VOA News, Ashing, Cameroon.
The Malawi Electoral Commission has introduced the use of a biometric voter registration system for next year's elections. The aim is to prevent problems faced during registrations in previous elections. But groups involved in getting voters registered say the new system is likely to face a legal challenge. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi has always relied on paper registration for voters. Electoral authorities say this resulted in many challenges. Yahya Mad is a commissioner at the Malawi Electoral Commission.
We used to have a lot of problems in the past because some photographs may fall off and they misspelled names and their name. Now with the current system, it is going to be 100% correct because it will be a biometric system, which is going to follow a biometric way of capturing information.
He says another advantage of the new system is that it is faster and people will spend less time to lining up to register than in the past. In the past, voters used passports and driver's licenses as identification during registration. But the new system will work using only the national ID card issued by the National Registration Bureau. That document uses biometric data, such as fingerprints, to register residents. However, only about 9 million of 16 million Malawians have so far registered for the national identification document.
What is going to happen is that we are going to go out with members of NRB to the registration centers. Those without registration cards, they will actually be instructed or advised to go and get registered with NRB.
Steve Doe is the chairperson of the Malawi National Electoral Support Network. He says the new system is likely to face a legal challenge.
The legal challenge here is that the law as it stands now on registration, it does recognize different forms of identification apart from the national ID. We have noted that the Electoral Commission has seen this BVR as easier to implement and therefore would love as much as possible for the prospective voters only to use the national ID. But the question is what happens to the law.
The Malawi Electoral Commission has asked the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Affairs to amend the new law so that the national ID will be the only document for purposes of identifying eligible voters. Malawi is expected to start the voter registration campaign next month. Elections are set for next year. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
The annual U.S. State Department's Human Rights Report cited significant human rights violations in Egypt, including arbitrary killings, disappearances, torture, life-threatening prison conditions, and the use of military courts to try civilians and political prisoners. Egypt responded to the criticism by saying that human rights situation in Egypt is connected to constitutional guarantees, and the Egyptian Council for Human Rights and the Egyptian Parliament are monitoring it. The Egyptian government also says that it is combating a serious terrorism threat, given the scores of deadly attacks in the country over the past few years. Andrew Miller is the Deputy Director for Policy at the Project on Middle East Democracy. He told VOA's Mohammed Al-Shanawi that such violations of human rights would have some ramifications on U.S.-Egyptian relations.
I think it contributes to the tension in the bilateral relationship between the U.S. and Egypt. Human rights have not been the core priority for the Trump administration, but they've nevertheless been inclined to take some action in response to particularly flagrant violations of human rights. The decision in August of 2017 to withhold or reprogram about $300 million in military assistance and economic assistance was driven in part by concerns over the status of civil society organizations and a new NGO law that would have enabled increased repression against them. You know, whether this specific report leads to a change in policy will depend a lot on what direction Mike Pompeo takes the department, the Secretary of State. And there is reason to think that he may be less critical of Egypt than Rex Tillerson was, based on his anti-Muslim rhetoric in the past and his priority on counterterrorism cooperation as director of the CIA. But if he does listen to his department, if he listens to his staff, his agency, undoubtedly they will continue to advocate for a more robust response to Egyptian human rights violations, and I hope that he does listen to them.
The report also criticized what it terms as significant restrictions on the freedom of expression and the right of peaceful assembly. How does that impede any progress toward a real democratic transition in Egypt?
Freedom of expression is integral to any type of democratization or liberal political progress. If citizens cannot express themselves either individually as parts of groups, you're not going to have any chance for a legitimately, incredibly democratic society. So continued repression, continued restrictions on freedom of speech will mean that Egypt remains mired in an authoritarian regime.
Egypt responded to the State Department report by saying that human rights situation in Egypt is connected to constitutional commitments and monitored by the Egyptian Council for Human Rights and the Egyptian Parliament. What's your take on that?
I think the 2014 Egyptian constitution provides more human rights and democratic protections than prior Egyptian constitutions, but it's clear that those terms haven't been respected by the security services. And you know, I think their rhetorical commitment to honoring the constitution has not been observed in practice. So what we've seen is those provisions regularly ignored, a security apparatus that's increasingly rapacious in cracking down on not just dissenting voices, but independent voices within Egypt. The National Council on Human Rights, in certain instances, has tried its best to improve the human rights situation, but it's clear that they are not the ones who wield power, and their ability to get anything done depends on cooperation from the Egyptian executive branch, including President Sisi, the military, the police, and that simply hasn't been forthcoming.
That was Andrew Miller, the Deputy Director for Policy at the Project on Middle East Democracy. He spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shanawi about human rights violations in Egypt.
Seventeen past the hour, you are listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says he gave President Donald Trump a view of security conditions during their summit yesterday at the White House.
Virtually, he wanted to hear from me, what progress did we make on this? And I explained those. Certainly, the best way to know about this is to ask the people from the Northeast. At the time we came, the Boko Haram were holding majority of the local governments in Borno State at least, but now they are not holding any particular local government, according to what the military told me, and I believe them.
Buhari made the comments late yesterday in an interview with VOA's Peter Cloti a few hours after meeting with U.S. President Donald Trump at the White House. He was the first sub-Saharan African leader to have a White House summit with Trump, who has been criticized for reportedly making derogatory comments about Africa. The Boko Haram Islamic militants remain active in northeastern Nigeria and neighboring Cameroon, but have been severely weakened by multinational task force that includes Nigeria and four of its neighbors. During a news conference after their meeting, Buhari thanked Trump for approving the sale of $600 million in military equipment, which the administration of former President Barack Obama had suspended over allegations of human rights abuses. Buhari described his meeting as positive. A main goal, he said, was to seek U.S. help in expanding different sectors of the economy.
Well, what we want is for the United States government to guarantee their business people, their companies, to go and invest more in Nigeria. We have discussion with a number of companies today, those that agro-based, and with their tremendous experience and technology, we are guiding them, please, to go to Nigeria and have a discussion with some of our business people that can invest in farming.
He defended himself against criticisms that he had done too little to address the issue of violence between herdsmen and farmers. He said it is a long-standing problem that now is being worsened by climate change and by the spread of weapons from Libya and neighboring countries. He says that a fair solution can be achieved.
I advise Ministry of Agriculture to dig into the archives of the Old North. There are cattle route and grazing areas where windmills and ash dams were built. In some of them, they even put veterinary departments. And anybody, any herder who allowed his cattle to stray into any farm, the farmer will report, the cattleman will be arrested, the farmer will submit his bill, the herder will be asked to pay. If he can, his cattle are sold and the man is paid. So we have to go back to that. People encroach on the grazing area. They encroach on the cattle route. So that has to be clear.
Although Nigeria has been a major partner in the U.S. fight against the Islamist extremists in Africa, relations have faced challenges over the past year. In January, Nigeria joined a list of outraged African countries demanding an explanation from the U.S. ambassador after Trump's reported vulgar comments referring to African countries. Asked whether those comments came up during his private meeting with Trump, Buhari declined to comment, saying he does not comment on issues when he is not sure of the validity of an allegation.
Worker rallies were held across South Africa today, May Day. COSATU, which has for a long time been the leading trade union federation, invited President Cyril Ramaphosa to deliver the keynote address at its main event, but all eyes were on the new kid on the block, the South African Federation of Trade Unions. It's led by Zwelsley Zima Vavi, the expelled former leader of COSATU. Nadia Sammy caught up with Vavi as he prepared to board a plane about why he is opposing Ramaphosa's proposed minimum wage, which is a first for the country. She also asked him about the major issues his organization is raising on Workers' Day.
Well, the worsening levels of poverty, unemployment, inequality, and the new attacks on the rights of workers. They are proposing amendments that will literally make it impossible for workers to embark on a strike in the future.
Now, a national minimum wage has been introduced. It's at around 20 rand per hour. That's more or less $1.60 per hour. SAFTU is vehemently against this. Please tell us why.
Because it will entrench poverty, it will entrench inequalities. There are going to be black workers who are the underclass in our society already. They are security, they are cleaning, hotel workers, they are workers which we regard as the most marginalized in the economy. It's saying that we must accept that we must live under apartheid 24 years into democracy. We just oppose to that.
Now, COSATU, the trade union federation that you headed for several years before and is now your competition, has welcomed this minimum wage. They say it's a starting point to improve people's lives. How do you respond to COSATU's stance on the minimum wage?
That's not surprising. These guys have signed the deal with the devil. They want to please the ANC, their alliance partners. We are opposed to the maintenance of the current economic conditions of the black majority, and whether they are brought by whoever who was a former worker hero at some point, we don't care. Workers can't continue to be trapped in these levels of poverty and inequality.
And then just last question, sir. This is your union federation's very first May Day. A year ago at this time, SAFTU wasn't in existence. Yet you recently held a very well-turned-out strike against the minimum wage and the labor law amendments. What is SAFTU's membership numbers looking like at the moment?
We're growing like wildfire. We're already 800,000 workers. And we hope that in the next 6 months, we will be above 1 million workers. We are the only organization that is growing now. Others are falling apart.
How would you describe your relationship with President Cyril Ramaphosa?
It doesn't exist. We have no relationship, nothing.
That was Welinzima Vavi of the South African Federation of Trade Unions. He was speaking with reporter Nadia Sammy.
Is the hashtag MeToo movement coming to Uganda's largest university? The school recently suspended a staff member accused of demanding sexual favors from a female student. Meanwhile, trial preparations are underway for a landmark civil suit filed by a former student who says the university failed to protect her from sexual harassment and violated her rights. For VOA, Halima Tumani reports from the university in Kampala.
Makerere University counts 40,000 students and is considered one of the top schools in East Africa. Yet, Makerere is now under fire, accused of not doing enough to stop the alleged sexual harassment of female students. Chisule Rehma said she never reported her experience. She went to a professor to dispute a grade.
Then the lecturer made a statement like, have you had sex before? So I was wondering, how is this coming up? Like, I'm asking for marks and you're asking me whether... So he was, when I gave him a very weird face, I'm like, what are you talking about? He tried to like, no, you know, okay, no, that's not the thing. So if you've had sex before, you're supposed to, the marks... Like, he wasn't making sense. I had to just, like, from that day, I don't even go to his office.
The issue has long been whispered about at Makerere, but two cases have gone public this year.
It's someone with authority who abuses it and seeks for sexual favors from vulnerable students in return to, you know, some missing marks, some academic-related favor.
Law professor Sylvia Tamale leads a committee set up in 2017 to handle cases of sexual harassment. More than a decade ago, administrators rolled out a short-lived and much-criticized dress code for female students.
I was challenging that proposal. I told him, supposing I find your lips extremely sexy and, you know, kissable, are you going to cover them? In other words, sexualizing women's bodies is not a women's problem. Blaming the victim is extremely wrong. It is missing the point.
Lawyer Isaac Semakade is representing a female student who sued the university this February. She was dismissed in 2013 after she reported sexual harassment. The court proceedings remain under seal.
The impact of the global MeToo movement cannot be understated here. The extraordinary courage other women have had to master to speak out against this historical prejudice and injustice that they've suffered in their workplace, in schools, and in various institutions of public and private life.
Students say reporting abuse is still not easy. Brenda Lapobo is a Students' Affairs Minister at Makerere University.
Here comes the problem whereby even the dean of student is maybe a personal friend to the very lecturer. So in that scenario, what do you do? What do you do? We get stuck at the end of it, and they tell you, you know what? The situation is being investigated, and you wait in vain.
There are signs of change. The university's sexual harassment policy dates back to 2006, but the school is now creating mandatory online training to raise awareness. Meanwhile, administrators quickly suspended a registrar official in April after a student posted a photo on Facebook of his alleged inappropriate behavior. That investigation is ongoing. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Aiden Utko, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari meets with President Donald Trump at the White House on Monday, April 30th. We'll discuss their meeting and current U.S.-Africa relations on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.